I'm sure some of you have probably heard the story about the several women in the congregation were just really put out with how bland the pulpit area looked. They wanted to have a big flower arrangement up front, and they didn't have one. So they put together and they gathered some money up, several ladies, and it cost over $1,000. They bought this big pillar to put this flower arrangement on. Beautiful. They were so happy when they got that put up there. And then it was there for one Sunday. The next Sunday they come back and it's gone. And of course, where's our flower arrangement? And nobody knew. And so they started asking around. Nobody knew. And so they went to the elders and said, "Where's the flower arrangement?" And the elder said, "Well, I don't know, but we'll ask the janitor and maybe he can find it." And so they asked the janitor, said, "See if you can find the flower arrangement. Somebody's moved it." And so the janitor goes through every closet, every room in the church building. And he reports back to the elders and says, "Listen, it's not here. I've looked in every closet, every room. It is not here. It's not in the building." Well, so the elders got with the secretary and said, "Send out an email to the church and say, whoever borrowed the flower arrangement, have them bring it back." And no response from that. So they did a phone tree, record a message and have it sent to every member of the congregation. And so they recorded a message and it said, "Listen, if you have borrowed the flower arrangement for some reason, it's okay, just bring it back. It was donated by some women, they spent a lot of money on it. We'd like to have it back." Nobody responded to that either. Every Sunday, the elders would get up at the opening announcements and say, "Just a reminder, somebody has borrowed the arrangement. I don't know if it's for a wedding or a shower or something, but somebody's taken it. Could you please bring it back?" A lot of money was invested in that, and nothing for like 6 weeks. And they're a buzz. They're beginning to blame each other. Like, "I think, you know, I don't trust that person very much. You know, it's probably him. It's in his living room, I bet." And they started blaming each other. Well, finally, after 6 weeks, the preacher gets up and he says, "Listen, I have a confession to make. I took the flower arrangement." And there were gasps. "You did what? You took the flower arrangement that we've been all looking for?" And he said, "Yes, I did. And let me tell you why I did it. Because I want to ask you a question. I want you to answer this question for me. Why do you love this flower arrangement more than you do people?" Ouch. You see, when that flower arrangement went missing, everybody got involved. Everybody was talking about it. Phone calls, emails, people talking in the pews about the flower. Everybody was talking about the flower arrangement. They were concerned. Money was, this was valuable. And yet, how many of us, as we sit in our pews at church, can look around at our pews and see empty places where someone used to be? And when's the last time we sent out an email about them? Or called and inquired? Or discussed with fellow Christians about their situation? Or made an announcement in the church to the body of Christ to reach out to these people? When's the last time that's happened? Why would we do that and show that kind of concern for a lost arrangement of flowers and not a lost soul? I've been asked to discuss the truth about evangelism. And I do think this is true, and I may be wrong in some places and with some people, but I've seen it. You can see almost the light go off when you preach on evangelism. People are like, "Oh, here we go again, evangelism. We all know evangelism, you know, right? It's in all gospel accounts, all four of them. Matthew 28:19-20, "Go ye therefore and teach all nations," or "make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all things whatsoever I've commanded you, and lo, I'm with you always, even to the end of the world." Mark 16:15-16, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He who believes and is baptized shall be saved, but he who does not believe shall be condemned." Luke 24:46-47, "Thus it is written, and thus it behooved Christ to suffer and rise from the dead the third day, that repentance and remission of sins should be preached in his name among all nations. John 20, verse 21, Jesus said to his disciples, as the Father has sent me, so I send you. We know the verses, right? I mean, the Bible is full of this great commission that we talk about, but we zone out when we talk about it because, and maybe this is why, we've talked about what it is we're supposed to evangelism, but maybe we have failed to give the motive for evangelism. We know what we're supposed to do. I just haven't been motivated to get off my pew and do it. And maybe that's where we need to be spending more time. Not informing people of what they already know, but telling them how and teaching them how to do what they know is their obligation to do and why to do it. And I want to share with you this morning three things that we need to know about evangelism. And the first one is this: evangelism is a command. We have a lot of people who treat evangelism as if it were a talent. Like, and then they excuse themselves of doing it because, well, that's not my talent. Evangelism isn't a talent, it's a command. We're to take the good news of the gospel to the lost, and that is not dependent upon talents. It's a command that is given to us by God. Can you imagine us treating God's commands in that way in any other realm of Christianity? Okay, Lord's Supper. That's just not my talent. I mean, quiet, thoughtful meditation, I'm just not good. My mind races 100 miles an hour. I just can't sit down and meditate on the sacrifice of Jesus in that kind of a setting. I'm just going to let somebody else do the Lord's Supper for me. Well, we would not fly with that. We would know that's wrong. It's not a talent. It's a command to be obeyed. Take the Lord's Supper and remember Jesus. Do this in remembrance of me. We get it with the Lord's Supper. But I'm telling you, we've tried to pass it off when it comes to evangelism. We've tried to say, that's not my talent. We'll let other people do that. I'll do some other things, but I'm not going to evangelize. I don't know how to do it. I'm not good. I'm not equipped. I don't have enough knowledge. 1,001 excuses. But at the end of the day, it's a command. And, you know, we know this passage, and we've often applied it to people who are outside of Christ and who are not disciples of Jesus necessarily. But look at Matthew 7, 21. Not everyone that says unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who's in heaven. You can't have a relationship with God and claim him as your Lord if you're going to disobey him. You can't ignore the command to evangelize and think, oh, God's good with me. We're okay. I mean, I do so many other things for the Lord. I just don't do that, but I do a lot of other things. And so if you don't do the will of the Father, you're not going to enter into the kingdom of heaven. And this isn't said to people who are like atheists and agnostics and people who have nothing to do with God. Well, he says this to people who then in response to this will say, well, Lord, have we not done many mighty works in your name? Have we not cast out demons in your name? What's this all about? And Jesus will say, I never knew you. We never had a relationship. I was never your Lord. I hear you calling me Lord, but I was never your Lord. You remember what Luke says? Why do you call me Lord and do not the things that I tell you? So the first thing I want you to know about evangelism is that it is a command, not a talent. You can't pass it off for somebody else to do. You can't, it's not multiple choice where you get to pick other things instead of. We need to be evangelists. Let me tell you the second thing you need to know about evangelism, and that is, and really it gets down to the motive, evangelism will save souls from a devil's hell. We've got to understand, maybe we've salved our conscience, maybe we've buried it in the back of our mind, and we don't like to think about it, but we have to understand, if we're If someone dies outside of Christ, they are lost forever. It's not just, obey the gospel so you can go to heaven. Those who don't are lost forever. And I don't know that we have made maybe there's a disconnect. Maybe we understand, well, we need to evangelize. I get that. It's a command of God. But we don't put the motive attached. We've disconnected the motive. Do we really believe that if we don't reach the lost, that they're really lost? Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he made a statement that should ring in our ears. He said, I believe, therefore I speak. We need to have, do you believe that those who don't obey the gospel are lost? If you believe that, how can you not speak? How can we know people are lost and headed for hell? If I know that and believe that, how can I not speak? How much hatred must I have for someone to know that they're headed to hell and I don't warn them? What is that? That can't be love. I remember Romans 10, beginning in, verse 9 or 10. You remember Paul said, whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. But how can they call on him whom they have not believed? And how can they believe on him in whom they have not heard? And how can they hear without a preacher? And how can a preacher preach to them unless he's sent? We've got to get the gospel to people so that they can call on the name of the Lord, because without it, they can't be saved. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1 and verse 8 says that Jesus will come back in flaming fire, taking vengeance on those who have not obeyed the gospel, who do not know God and who have not obeyed the gospel. This is heaven and hell material that we're talking about. A few years ago, I was preaching Sunday night, and a woman came in. She was a member of the congregation. She ran to me and grabbed my arm and said, Steve, I'm so excited. My husband has come to church with me. First time ever. And she was bubbling over with excitement. And she went up and she sat in the balcony of the congregation. And of all things, my sermon was, what must I do to be saved? And I'm thinking, this is providential. And so when I preached, I preached to one person that sermon. I saw that man up there, and I said everything I said in a way that I thought was most beneficial to him. And I explained the gospel as clearly as I knew how to do it. And when it came time for the invitation, I looked at him. I watched him, but he didn't move. When services were over, he went on out to the car, and his wife came to me and said, man, I'm so excited. Please keep us in our prayers. I'm so hopeful. This is the first time he's ever shown any inclination, and your sermon was like dead on. It's exactly what he needed to hear tonight. Well, she went on home. 3:00 in the morning, I got a call, and it was her. And she said, Steve, can you come to my house? My husband just died of a heart attack. Never obeyed the gospel. You know, I can read in newspapers of the death of people who have no relationship with Jesus, and it's just people, it's names. But when it's someone I know, it's tragic, and there's nothing that can be done. But I felt I did all that I could do. I didn't feel any guilt. I mean, I had preached the gospel to him, and it was as if God gave him one more chance to obey the gospel, and he said no, and there was nothing that I could do more than I did, and I had no guilt in that situation. But it hasn't always been that way in my life, because I've made mistakes that I have later had to ask God to forgive me of, and the price is high. I had a high school friend. We were best buddies in high school. And it had been 30 years since we had been together in high school. I'd only seen him once in passing since that our graduation from high school. Out of the blue one day, I got a message, an email from my friend, and he said, and he used, I'm just going to say how he said it. He said, "Higgy, I'm dying. Please pray for my wife and daughter." And I was stunned. I mean, my friend is dying. He had cancer, he explained later in the email. And I said, I've got to talk to him. I was in a gospel meeting at the time, and I was so busy with all that. And then I got home, and I was busy, and there was school and all these things going on. And I let that slip. I totally forgot until I got another email from another college or high school friend who said, "My friend died." It was a couple months later. And he reached out to me. I intended to do something, and I didn't. And he died outside of Christ. Now, I don't know if what I could have said or would have said could have changed him. I don't know the answer to that. But I do know I didn't warn him. And for that, I needed forgiveness. I'm reminded of the statement Ezekiel made in Ezekiel chapter 33, where he talked about those watchmen that are put, and you know, if they blow the trumpet and somebody dies when the enemy comes, it's their own fault. But if he doesn't blow the trumpet and the man dies and perishes in the battle, their blood is on your head, the watchman's head. Paul used that same allusion in Acts chapter 20 and verse 26 when he said, "I'm free from the blood of all men, because I've not shunned to declare unto you the whole counsel of God." I couldn't say that in this case. And maybe there are people in your life that you need to talk to about Jesus before it's too late. You don't want to have that tragedy occur in your life where you know, "I should have said something and I didn't." Evangelism will keep people from going to hell. You need to know that about evangelism. And let me give you a third thing about evangelism. And it's this, that evangelism needs to be practiced and not just talked about. See, we can have sessions like this. We can have workshops. We can have seminars. We can have special programs. We can have training sessions. That's all good. But when are we going to quit having training sessions and workshops and do it? We've got to do it. We have to put it in practice. James 1 and verse 22, James said, you know, we have to be more than hearers of the word. We have to do the word. We've got to get from the classroom into the streets and talk to people about Jesus. We've got to get past theories and methods and just do it. Just talk to somebody. I had a lady one time call me, and she said, "Steve, could you come and study the Bible with me?" I knew she was already engaged in a study with somebody else. And I said, "Well, aren't you studying with so-and-so?" And she said, "Well, yes, but we're like 6 weeks in or whatever, and we're still talking about things. Like, he has this regiment that I have to go through, and it's stuff I would agree with him on. You know, we've talked about God and the Bible and how it's our authority. I agree with all that. What I need to know is, what do I need to do to be saved?" And he keeps telling me, "Well, we have to get through this before we get to that. And can you not just come out to my house and tell me what I need to do to be saved?" See, sometimes our methods get in the way of evangelism. Talk to people, teach them about Jesus, and meet them where they are. And, you know, you don't have to have... What seminar do grandparents take to enable them to talk about their grandkids like they do? What's the name of that workshop? They don't need one because they love their kids and their grandkids. And we don't have to have a workshop or a seminar or a training session to evangelize if we know the Lord and love the Lord. Let's preach the gospel. Let's evangelize. the world, our job, our task, it's urgent that we do it because souls hang in the balance.